When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
But I still felt like I was not accepted as a person. I felt like I needed to be perfect because of the expectations put on me, you know. But I had a loose screw missing with Dad not being in the house consistently. And I needed a lot of mental help in some things.
What age did you start counseling? And I'm curious about how your parents, but your father specifically, felt about you being in counseling. Because I have an opinion of that as a father. Like, and hopefully it's giving you time to kind of gather your thoughts. But when I started this podcast, one of the things that I was struggling with is I want my sons, my children, period, but in the vein of dear son, I want my son to be, you know, emotionally intelligent enough and emotionally available enough to tell me if he needs counseling and be willing to go to counseling. But I also don't want my son to need counseling because I felt like it reflected poorly, you know, of me as a father. Like,
why is it?
Because it wasn't a thing. Like, I didn't have it. Like, what happened with me that now my son needs it?
They tried to count me out. I'm going to count me in. Fill up my bank account. Now I got something to spend.
Everything is recording. That's red. That's red. That's red. And that's red. So we good money.
We good money. Let's get it.
Welcome to the Dear Son Show. We have meaningful conversations about life through the lens of fatherhood. It's for fathers, those with fathers, and the fatherless. So nobody's left out. These are the conversations we want our sons to access as they grow through life into manhood. So no topics are off limits. I'm the only regular host, D. Johns, today. Today, we got a very amazing guest because you guys know I only do amazing guests. Mr. Tim Nicholas, welcome to the Dear Son Show. How are you, my brother?
What's up, Derek? How you doing, man?
Everything is great, man. Better since you're here.
Hey, appreciate that, man. I really appreciate the warm hospitality in your home and just your location. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Brother pulled up, man. We got connected on IG, which is probably the story for a lot of people. A lot of different types of relationships these days, but I saw the brother working. Mutual respect. And we're going to get into all of the things you're doing. Make sure you shout out your podcast and everything you got going on. But I always got to back up and double back to make sure when my guests say they're doing good, they're doing good, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. And I really appreciate your support just for even knowing, like, you know, about my platform, about my podcast as well. And, you know, even for pulling up at the live podcast discussion about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, so we had that live podcast discussion and, you know, topics on different things about love, entrepreneurship, and then a combination of the two. And you showed up, man, and you supported me without even knowing me. You know, we had never met before. Yeah. We had never met in person. It just was conversation through Instagram. So just that type of camaraderie, man, I mean, it's rare to see amongst brothers, and especially amongst brothers that you don't really know.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that for real, man. Thank you.
It was a dope show, man. It was pulled up for two reasons, man. Number one, the show producer had the courage to do that. And that's something I'm struggling with. Like, I don't have answers as to why I'm not doing live experiences. In conversations with people that are just curious, like, when are y'all going to do something? Conversations with, like, my co-hosts and other people that kind of support and help with the show. I don't have an answer other than fear of the unknown. Mm. So seeing y'all do that was motivation for me, right? And it kind of checked me a little bit, like, yeah, we can do this. We can also do this. And then the conversation was dope. You know what I'm saying? I should have stayed. Because it was supposed to end at the time. I was like, man, I think it was 9 o'clock. About 9:10, I was like, man, I told wife, I'm coming. Not that she's on trip.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, let me get home. I don't know how long y'all went, but the conversations was getting crazy. And I saw you drop your 8 things or what have you. I saw that part. I was like, okay.
8 essential needs of a man. That's it, man. You know, even talking about those 8 essential needs, right? And I don't know if you stayed, you were able to stay, because I know you had, hey.
I heard you do it.
Family man, so I understand.
The crowd was going off when you did that, and I was like, I got a pill.
Well, I appreciate that, man, and I'm very humbled by that, you know, because it's something that I had to put on paper on just understanding what our essential needs are as men, right? Now, a woman on stage, as I'm sharing those things, and afterwards she took the mic back and said, you know, well, those are also things that a woman needs.
Yeah. I did hear that part.
And sometimes what bothers me about that comment is that sometimes we're talking about, you want to know as a woman, you want to know what men's needs are. Mental health is so prevalent in our community. We're talking about that now, about like why we see a lot of people, particularly men, do some of the things that we do. And it's because of the lack of mental health, right?
Sure.
So as y'all give us a space, as women give us men a space, we should be able to share these are our needs and not have to lump in what a woman's needs are at that time, because now it's all about what can I get as opposed to what can I give. It just changes the mentality. So let's stay on the topic of, okay, here are the needs, and let's focus on the needs. And yes, if you're taking care of that person's needs, it's only natural that they're going to want to take care of your needs too. You feel me?
One would think.
So one would think.
Yeah, one would think. We're going to get into all of that, man. But let's start with your origin story, man. That accent isn't from here, neither is mine. Where you from?
I was born in Philly, but I was raised in Baltimore. So I'm East Coast all the way. Shout out to Baltimore that made me. Shout out to B-More that really raised me. And so I take pride in that, you know, being an East Coast guy for sure.
Yeah, East Coast in the building, man. Yeah, 757 for me. Man, 757. Yeah. That might have been what the energy was, man, because it's easy to recognize people that aren't from here.
Absolutely.
It's like, you're not, no. And not from Louisiana, because it's either like you're from Houston here or it feel like some part of Louisiana.
Orleans or something, or yeah, Baton Rouge.
Wallace. Shout out to my co-host.
Yes, sir.
Him and his wife are from Louisiana. But what? So how long did you spend in Philly before you moved to Baltimore?
I was 2 years old when I moved from Philly to Baltimore. And so my mom's side of the family is from Philly, excuse me. My mom's side of the family is from Philly, and then my dad's side is from Baltimore. And so, you know, at the time, my mom, you know, was convinced by my dad to get married, move down to Baltimore, had that family support down there.
Right.
And unfortunately, that support would have been ran by the crazy side of my family, my dad's side.
And so right to it.
we ended up always going back to Philly because that was our comfort zone. So whenever I ever rep really where I'm from, is from Philly, because that's where my love was. That's where my family was. And that's where I got the most support, was from my family from Philly. So shout out to Philly. That's where I'm from.
Yeah,
you know?
Y'all had Vic and y'all had AI, so that's why the whole for me.
Hey, sports wise,
that's all whole for me. I heard you say something, man. It won't even ear hustling. You said it in earshot, and very aware that you were an Eagles fan. Don't know as you sitting in the Dallas house.
Whoa!
On camera.
You a Cowboys fan?
On camera.
You a Cowboys fan? How is that possible?
People
man?
Always say that. So from 757 in the 80s and 90s, it seemed like you were either a Cowboys fan, a Redskins fan, or the team that's in that area. I don't even know what their name is this time. Or you were a Steelers fan. That's how it worked. And everybody questioned, like, how you not a the other team fan? I was bred to hate that team. Like that was the, it was so bad. My dad, the rule was you just couldn't root for that team. He let me root for Giants for a little bit. Like when I, Phil Sims, like I, 13, 14, I was a Giants fan. But here's the extent of me being a fan is just this conversation. I don't care. I really,
sure?
When I moved here, I went crazy. I went to probably 6 or 7 games every season for 2 or 3 years trying to catch up. And now I'm like, the tickets are outrageous. I really don't even, I'm so focused on entrepreneurship, this platform. I don't know if I saw, I don't even know if I saw the whole Super Bowl, if I watched it.
You know what? You're a corporate fan, man.
That's fine. I'm honest with it. Anybody, when you catch James next time, he'll tell you, he's like, I'm not delusional. I'm just telling you how it is.
So honestly, I'm an Eagles fan sitting in a person's home that lives in Dallas, but you're not really a Cowboys fan.
I was that before I got here. You was who you was when you got here.
Man, I'm not,
oh, even, this is
not like, even intimidated by that.
It ain't even funny. Y'all got y'all time. Like I said, y'all had we'll Big, see. Y'all had AI. I couldn't do. They both from Hampton Newport News. I can't really, you know.
That's
it's some good. It's some good to y'all, man. It's some good.
It is. It is. Good. Shout out. I'm telling you, shout out to the 757, man.
For sure.
Like,
for sure.
We got
for
some
sure.
good cats from that came up from out of that.
For sure. So Philly, what was, when you moved back to Philly, what age were you?
I never moved back.
I thought you said you went to Baltimore and then came back to Philly. You went to Baltimore State.
No. So I lived in Baltimore from 2 until I was 18.
Oh.
But I was going up to Philly every weekend.
Gotcha.
So that was like, that's why back I say that's my foundation is that we was going, if we was not going up there every weekend, it was like every other weekend.
Gotcha.
So that's where my home base is. You know what I'm saying? As far as my family, where my family structure came from.
Yeah.
I have family in Baltimore, like my grandmother, my aunts and uncles lived there, but life was so toxic on that side. Like my dad and his brothers and sisters hate each other.
Wow.
And so my mom shielded me away from that side of the family. Like they was just crazy. So I wasn't really rocking with my family in Baltimore. And even to this day, while I got love for them because I see them doing great things on social media and everything like that, we just live two totally different lives.
So what had the greater influence on you? Philly, for sure?
Definitely.
Okay. What was the dynamics in the home like? Like what was the family structure, brothers and sisters?
So I'm the youngest of 5.
Wow.
My dad had 2 sons and 2 daughters, but they didn't live in a house with us. And so my dad, he was married multiple times. He was like a rolling stone. I mean, four different moms, you know, 4 kids. My oldest brother, Mario, is currently incarcerated for murder. So I haven't seen my brother Mario in probably over 20 years. I've talked to him on the phone and things like that through my dad, through channels with my dad and stuff, but don't really have a relationship with him.
Right.
He has a daughter, my niece, who I just met officially back in 2021. She lives in Atlanta. So I met her for the first time. I met her mom for the first time. And, you know, that was a great, you know, thing to kind of connect with her because you still family, you
right.
know. My sister Nikki, she lives in Philly, but really don't, you know, really have a relationship with her. We just live 2 totally different lives. And then I have my older sister, Tisha. We're like the closest on my dad's side. The two of us connect, if not every week, every couple of weeks, we talking and connecting with each other over the phone, FaceTimes and stuff. So we got a good relationship. But I grew up in the house with my dad, my mom, and my brother on my mom's side.
Okay.
We had different fathers. My mom was married to his dad previously, and then she got married to my dad. And so my brother and I, we grew up, you know, he's 7 years apart. He just celebrated a birthday on July 24th. And so his birthday was just this week. He just turned 44, so just proud of the man he is. You know, he's passes UBE, but he's an attorney now, so he's just doing just great things. Great role model. Just became a dad a few months ago, so.
Okay.
I mean, my brother's doing great, and so I'm real proud of him. That dynamic at home was loving but toxic at the same time.
How did it shape the way that you saw family or value family throughout life?
I would definitely say it shaped my way of family. It was a confusing way to shape family. I always love like my biggest thing is loving people. I love people, right? And the idea of love and people being happy and living this fairy tale life, I guess that was, I always live life in a fairy tale mindset, you know? So if you know what I mean, like when you have seen things or when things have happened to you, you try to live in like the fairy tale lifestyle. So I always hoped for better based on what I would see on TV, the movies and all that. But I also was like in such a confused state of living that all I could do was dream about something.
Yeah. Great. Fairy tale lifestyle. What was that your escape from what was in front of you? And what did you envision? Like, what were those fairy tales? Because it's interesting to hear a man describe it as a fairy tale. Now, I'm not knocking it, but it seems like it was, for me, it just drives home that that was really an escape, right, from what was going on. So what in your fairy tale thoughts, dreams, or escapes, what did you want of a family in that land, in fairy tale land?
I really just wanted to be loved and to be accepted. So what I saw in that fairy tale life was experiencing a love with a woman that I had somewhat longed for with my mother. Not saying that I don't like have that love for my mom. Like my mom and I love each other. Great, like at one point we were best friends, you know, thick as thieves and stuff.
Right.
But I still felt like I was not accepted as a person. I felt like I needed to be perfect because of the expectations put on me, you know. But I had a loose screw missing with dad not being in the house consistently. And I needed a lot of mental help in some things. I didn't get that help. So my way of escaping was thinking about what life could be.
Wow. You said, I'm processing it. Expectations that were put on you, were these expressed like verbal expectations, or were these things that you assumed because of what was going on in the house? What were, how did you, like, what was the basis of those expectations?
I think it was a mix of both.
Okay.
I think when you have a brother that's excelling academically, even at a young age, you're expected to excel academically. Maybe to that same level of your brother who is 7 years older, but you still have to excel at something. That's the expectation. But you got to excel while you're still dealing with trying to figure out who you are as a young man, as a child, where you fit. You don't feel accepted because you already feel different. You feel peculiar, I guess you could say. You feel like you just don't fit into a lot of circles. And that's masking your identity. You don't have an identity at that point. And so my way of escaping, me personally, was even at a young age, knowing what kind of identity I wanted, which was to be in love, have a family, and to be the best person I could be.
Yeah.
So even at a young age, I knew that.
What was the, your brother was 7 years older. My sister is 5 years old. It was just the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And she had that act. She didn't try to put academic pressure on me, but because she was first, and I think she got her first C in college.
Okay.
But like swimming, because she didn't want to go underwater, something stupid like that. Yeah, like she was just, some of it was natural, but she was like, she worked at it and it was important to her way earlier than it was important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what it is to feel like you're competing with that, and it's a pressure. Part of it was me being lazy. It wasn't that I couldn't achieve it, but I didn't want it like she wanted it.
Yeah.
So my C's and D's looked even worse when she had straight A's, right? Because if that's my sister, certainly I can do the same thing. And that's how I think parents thought back then, because you weren't necessarily parented for the individual that you were. Mm-hmm. You were parented for what the family is, or what the name is, what those expectations are. So it's interesting that you said that.
Yeah.
Did your brother, was there any like direct conflict or not conflict, but friction with you and your brother relationship because maybe he was more superior in some things than you were?
Yeah, there was definitely friction in you know, in our upbringing. I think for me, it was the, I'm already dealing with not knowing my identity as a young child, as a young boy, but then to always get made fun of in certain ways for being different, for maybe not listening to the same music as you, or for not, you know, being into the same things as you, kind of feel judged in that aspect, right?
Yeah.
Because, and then on top of that, where school and talking to people, talking to girls, and even talking to people in general became natural for you, I had to struggle on just the basic understanding of certain things. I wasn't the best to excel in school. I needed a tutor, you know? And so I was in counseling at a young age. So there was already something missing where things came natural for you. They didn't start coming natural for me until later on in life and until I became an adult. And so I always felt that pressure as a kid, knowing that he was able to excel a lot easier and a lot better in things than I was. And I was always proud of him, but you still had that added weight and pressure.
Yeah.
Even, and you start to even overthink it in your own mind and start putting more pressure on yourself. That's why I think it was both, where it was like that pressure came internally and externally.
Yes. What was counseling like, and at what age did you start? Were you, a couple of things. What age did you start counseling? And I'm curious about how your parents, but your father specifically, felt about you being in counseling. Because I have an opinion of that as a father. Like, and hopefully it's giving you time to kind of gather your thoughts. But when I started this podcast, one of the things that I was struggling with is I want my sons, my children, period, but in the vein of dear son, I want my son to be, you know, emotionally intelligent enough and emotionally available enough to tell me if he needs counseling.
Yeah.
And be willing to go to counseling. But I also don't want my son to need counseling, because I felt like it reflected poorly, you know, of me as a father. Like,
why is it?
Because it wasn't a thing. Like, right. my dad, I didn't have it. Like, what happened with me that now my son needs it?
Yeah.
So how what was it, like, what age and how was that dynamic with your pops?
I was about 7 years old when I started going counseling. I needed it, and I needed to go to counseling specifically because I was a hyper child. So I needed to get on ADHD medicine at a young age. In order to do that, you have to be seen by a psychologist in order to get the prescription. And so I had to go to Dr. Bob maybe every month. You know, I had to sit in Dr. Bob's office and talk about my problems, my home life, my home situation, and all these things, you know, where I see now it's a ploy to get you to open up.
Yeah.
You know, but I'd be in there playing the games and the Monopoly games with the shrink and all that other stuff. I remember those things vividly. Being in Dr. Bob's office. I don't remember seeing my dad take me to Dr. Bob often. My mom would be the one primarily to take me. So I would have never known if it was something that he would have been against or right. for. Maybe looking back on it now, because he didn't really talk to me about what Dr. Bob and I were talking about. Maybe it reflected poorly that he didn't support the decision. And my mom shielded me from whatever decision that he felt against that, you yeah. know? So I'm really not sure even to this day how he felt about that.
Is he still alive?
He's still alive. Okay. He's still alive. You know, I don't have an active relationship with my dad and, you know, for various reasons, but I do it to protect my peace, protect my family, things like that, because life already has enough troubles on its own on a daily basis. When you're dealing with being a husband, trying to be faithful, you're trying to be the best husband that you can be, the best father that you can be, the best example. You're trying to do all these things, right? And so having people and even family closest to you that can kind of weigh you down, it's just not an option for me.
What age did the relationship kind of start to fizzle?
Well, my mom and dad split up a lot and they would get back together. So they get married when I was 2 in 1988. And I remember, you know, we moved to Baltimore, you know, I would see the toxic arguments and the craziness go on, even though they probably thought I didn't see it or hear it. I still saw some things.
Yeah.
Right. My dad, honestly, I can't remember a lot of times where I felt a lot of love from my father, even being in the house, right? He spent a lot of time supporting my older brother, who is not only 7 years older, but he wasn't even his biological father. My brother already had a biological father that abandoned him and, you know, stayed out of his life. But my father took it upon himself to build this relationship with my brother, videotape all his basketball games, support all his games, go to his high school games, travel wherever he would need to go. I mean, he was like really in my brother's space, airspace like that. But when it came to me and the things that I had going on, he didn't put a lot of support into that. So my father and I have already had an estranged relationship before it even started.
Right. How did that, I want to get to like your teenage years coming into manhood, because that's where I started to, I had my father in the house. I every couple episodes, I end up rehashing the story. Y'all gonna listen to episodes one through 70 something to get context. But I had access to my father, who was a good father. We didn't have great communication. And I know the challenges it presented me, life presented me, because I wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
Like, I was responsible. I know how to cut grass and like stuff.
Yeah.
But like soft skills, how to deal with life, how to deal with women.
Mm-hmm.
Paying your bill, like things like that. I left the house without the information. When you, and I don't know if thrust into manhood is the right word, when you matured into manhood, what were some of the, man, I wish me and my pops talked about this. Like, what was the impact of that relationship not being as healthy as it could have been when you thought you were becoming a man? Because there's two different things. You think you're becoming a man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Life is like, hold on.
Definitely, I wish that my father would have been around to teach me the value of myself. But the problem was that he couldn't have taught me that. He didn't have that in him to teach me, because he was already doing things that were far left of even take care of himself. So I couldn't expect him to teach me anything like that, you know? But I do wish that I would have known the value of myself before I would have went down making bad choices and decisions that, you know, I made. So that's one thing. I also wished that, I wish I would have been taught just how to deal with my emotions, like you mentioned in the soft skills, right? And fortunately, I received a lot of soft skills from my mother, but it's nothing like getting soft skills and those types of things on how to navigate through different personalities, like from a strong man.
Right.
Because now you like, man, I know how to conduct myself as a man when certain situations happen. And I didn't get that opportunity. And so now, even at the age of 37 now, I'm developing my inner man. I mean, like taking it super serious. I've already wasted enough of God's good time playing games, being unfaithful in my previous marriage, you know, chasing women, traveling to chase women. I mean, I was pretty out there, risking it all just for some booty.
It's that simple in hindsight.
It's that simple, you
in
know,
the moment, just being, not so much. Yeah.
Being young and dumb and thinking that I missed the train on whatever. And I wish I would have known, going back to the value of myself, but I also wish that I just would have known how to handle my business, how to really take care of myself, and how to really, really conduct myself as a man.
Yeah. The first time, why did you get married?
The first time, why did I get married? I didn't want to be alone. Felt like I had already felt alone inside my head. I had done life by myself too much, and feeling so alone and empty on the inside, I was tired of that feeling.
How old were you?
I got married?
Yeah.
We got married when I was 25. 25.
Too. How long did it last? And I'm going somewhere.
9 years. We were together 9 years. Married 9 years.
And kids in that marriage?
Three.
Together.
Three together.
Three together. Mm-hmm. Neither of you had kids coming into the marriage?
I had one.
You had one.
I had a daughter. Marriage. Yep.
What was the... That's a real interesting window, that 25 to 34.
Yeah.
What were the challenges of a blended family in that phase? If there were any, I don't want to put it on you. If there weren't.
There were challenges even with my daughter and my ex-wife, my now ex-wife.
Uh-huh.
There were challenges because we were dealing with our daughter's mom who
mm-hmm.
still had vindictive feelings towards me. And I'm sure anyone who has been in a relationship where a child is, you know, when a child is created in that situation, but you're not married, it opens yourself up to a lot of things and a lot of negative things. And so then it became... the child is no longer just your child. Now it's an asset. And so now you got to protect your asset at all costs, which means that I'm a cutthroat the other parent to protect my asset no matter what. So I'm going to cut you. I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to say the wrong thing. I'm going to push all your buttons because now I'm protecting my asset at this point.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like, man. And so that challenge of protecting the asset, both of us having that mindset at this point, because now it's a business deal, right? I even said that. I said, well, shoot, I don't really want to be with you, so it's a business deal now. I'm going to take care of my daughter, but I'm only going to do it. Some of it I'm going to do to spite you to say, look, you done messed up. You done messed up the best thing since sliced bread, so I'm going to make sure you pay for that. And she had those same hurt feelings too when it, you know, now you having a child with somebody. I didn't even expect life to be like this from a woman's point of view. I expected the family structure.
Mm.
I'm not even getting that. And I'm getting an idiot of a father I got to father this child with, because I was an idiot in some ways. Now I got to deal with that dynamic. And so that bled over into the dynamic of my marriage. It was really tough. And so my wife at the time and my daughter couldn't establish a positive relationship because I'm so busy fighting the mom on the other side, but I'm not bringing the two of them together. And that's where I made the mistake. Now, I tried, and, right. you know, I tried, but I didn't try in a way that was productive for their relationship. And that's one of my biggest regrets for sure.
Yeah. So the two that were created in that marriage or in that relationship, how did it impact?
The three that were created.
Oh, you had one and then you had three. Mm-hmm. So this is four.
Yeah, I have four. I have four biological.
My math won't math.
No, you're good. So my ex-wife and I have an 8-year-old son and we have 3-year-old twins. And so we have twin daughters and our son. And so, yeah. And that was interesting in itself too.
Yeah. What, 9 years. That ran its course. You married again. How many years later?
Two and a half.
Second time, why'd you get married?
I got married this time because for multiple reasons. So number one, I knew that I had found my soulmate in this woman.
Mm.
So getting married is the right thing to do. I mean, to the where I tell people all the time, out of 7.8 billion people on the face of the planet, I found my person.
Right.
I don't need to waste any time. Now I want to build with my person. So that's why I got married to her. I got married to my wife because I love her with all of my heart, soul, and spirit. Like everything in me, I love that woman.
Yeah.
I couldn't just be a man and shack up with somebody who I deem is like my better half. I couldn't do that. She deserves the best of me.
Right.
But that's why I got married, was to build with someone that deserves the best of me.
So the what does the household look like now? Here's a story.
As of this month, we have a tribe. First of all, we have 7 combined children. We are the Black Brady Bunch, to say the least. Yes. I have 4 biological children. My wife has 2 biological children, but then she also adopted her nephew as well. So she has 3 children technically, which combined are 7 kids. So I don't even call them stepkids. They are bonus sons and daughters. Yeah. And I treat them just like my biological kids because, hey, I didn't bring you in this world, but I'm going to give you the love that you deserve in this world. Simple as that.
Yeah, I'm big. My oldest is not my biological, but there's no difference.
Yeah.
Why is not acknowledging or removing the step term so important to you?
Because I always feel like it's a step down. I just feel like automatically if you got a step, it means you got to step up or you have to step down.
Yeah.
And I just feel like having to add something to such a regal name that God created, such as mom, dad, and we got to replace it with stepmom and dad. I feel like that's something that was created to minimize the impact of what parents should be about.
Yeah.
So I just take it out and just bonus mom, bonus dad, you know.
I get it, man. Like I said, I don't acknowledge it. And to me, it's almost like a disclaimer.
Yeah, that's good.
Mine, but kind of, that's not really my blood flowing. So if something's off, mm-hmm. it seems like it's a real cop out.
Yeah.
And I'm not, well, I'm saying what I'm saying. that's the bottom line, but that's my reason for it. What are the ages?
So Caroline is 13, Tristan is 13. They're 7 months apart. So Tristan, my biological daughter, is the oldest.
Okay.
And then Caroline. And then we have Mason, who's 11. Carter is 10. Caden is 8. And then Chloe and Camille are 3. So 2 13-year-olds lumped in with 2 3-year-olds. And then you had the boys that are only 3 years apart between the 3 of them.
How did you, and answer as fairly or not, why did your wife accept you and your tribe?
She felt like this is where she needed to be as well. She accepted us because she knew, she had been studying me actually. So she tells me this story all the time, how she was on my podcast, Locks Lounge Podcast, right? So I brought her on along with her friend, Terry. They were both financial literacy instructors. My wife had just received her certification like maybe a couple of months prior.
Okay.
And she, you know, my wife is a powerhouse, went to Purdue University, got her MBA from Purdue. Like my wife is a straight up powerhouse, you know? And so one of the things that we were talking about on the show, we were just friends at the time. Mm-hmm. So we did the podcast and it was amazing, right? But we just established a friend.
With the McDonald's app, you can get your favorite thing delivered to your door. So if you were looking for a reason to skip washing those dishes you left in the sink, consider this a sign. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Right now, get $0 delivery fee with any purchase of $15 or more, only in the app. At participating McDonald's, minimum purchase excludes tax and service fees. Delivery prices may be higher than in restaurants. Other fees may apply, not valid with any other offer, discount, or coupon.
Friendship from that point on. But from that time that we were just friends, not going on any dates or anything.
Yeah.
She was studying me. She would go back to the podcast and look at episodes and say, man, he got some sense on him. And so that was like one thing. So she like says like the fact that I bring a lot of quote unquote emotional intelligence to the relationship. That's like one of the biggest draws that she had with me was just the fact that I can try to like study her and study how she is emotionally. And even before we started, you know, being fully into the engagement process, I went to her counselor and was like, yo, I need to know what triggers my wife. What's going to trigger my future wife? Because I plan on proposing to her at some point.
Hold tight. So I think if I'm not mistaken, you said that at the live show about going to, how does that work? Like you can go to the person's counselor. You had to finesse it or, I mean, how you
I mean, she just invited me in as a guest. Right. She invited me in as a guest and I was able to come in and still be able to share with her counselor. Now, of course, I had to sign a waiver everything just to say, hey, this everything is still confidential. Right.
Yeah.
But I was able to come in as a guest and just ask questions that I knew that my wife would be comfortable her sharing about her, you know, about just how Allie is.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this is good information. And I just would just take this on. Cause when I told you, man, I knew that was going to be my wife. I mean, twin flame stuff,
bro. I believe it. I believe it. You know.
I mean, when you know, you know. And I just knew early on that I was like, yeah. Even being on the podcast, something just stuck out about her. And I just knew.
So she's this powerhouse. She's impressive. She seems to be impressed by you. Did you feel like you deserved her?
I did. I actually did.
Dope.
Yeah, because I had been through enough bad apples to know what I didn't deserve. And I knew once she came into my life and the way she treated me, man, the way that woman came in and treated me, she treated me the way that I had dreamt being, like ever dreamt of being treated and loved and honored and just smothered with love and affection. Like, when I tell you, bro.
Fairy tale.
That fairy tale came true. And that's when I knew somebody who just did it so intricately and would do the things that I had dreamt about. That's when I was like, that's my twin flame. Like, that's that part where part of my spirit had been separated all those years and they finally came together.
Very dope. One of the last conversations I recorded that me and my partner recorded was about, we call it the curse of the unworthy, right? And it's when men go through things in life where they're at fault and they know that they've lost something, they didn't achieve a thing because they didn't have the right discipline, they didn't have the right behaviors, they just weren't the man they were supposed to be. And then when the good thing comes along that you wanted all this time, you start limiting what you believe you deserve because of all your failures.
Yeah.
Like, how did you get to a place? Because you mentioned that there were some things that you weren't really proud of. You had the challenges in your upbringing in terms of relationship. Mm-hmm. How did you get to a point where you recognize that, no, I'm deserving of this? I think it's dope, but I think a lot of men don't credit themselves after they've done the work to be deserving of a thing.
I mean, it just was in failure of relationships is where I really knew what I was receiving and the same frustrations that I was going through with women in other relationships. I kind of felt like I was punishing myself through my divorce situation. And I know I haven't shared much about those things, about the divorce, but I can tell you it was 100% my fault.
Mm-hmm. I respect that.
I was unfaithful to my wife at the time. I even would be to some level emotionally abusive by saying things that I knew would hurt her. I know that if I say this to you, it's going to cut you deep.
Even if it's not a tone, an abusive tone,
yes,
the words themselves. And I'm speaking for me. I'm not putting that on you, but that's what...
It was both.
Okay.
It was both. It was the tone. Mm. It was a disrespectful tone. And it was the things that I knew I would say that would cut you deep.
Yeah.
And so that just meant that, like, God was not even in the mix. Not even in the mix, right? And so now I got free, like, I'm allowing the enemy to have just free reign over anything that I do and say. I didn't understand it. But I knew that I wasn't taking that accountability at that time, man. So, but what happened while I say I didn't feel deserving of it was because I kept replaying all the things that I said to her in the back of my mind. I used to replay it over and over and over again. So when I got in relationships, premature relationships that I shouldn't have been in the first place, right? But I'm in these relationships and I'm dealing with hell with these women. And they're women that I really wouldn't even date if I had any bit of sense. Why am I putting myself through drama when I'm not even bringing drama to the equation? And you already know, bro. I'm going to tell you, you already know. If you with a woman, right, and you come in and you got all this drama, you dealing with baby mama drama, you dealing with money issues, and you dealing with all that stuff, you look like Tyrone. They not going to really mess with you. A educated woman, a black educated woman, if she got any sense, she going to kick your tail to the curb, right? And call all her girlfriends and say, he too got too much drama, right? But we as men, we have the same thing. The tables turn, right? And you don't really bring that kind of drama. You just all about just loving your woman, having a good time, wanting to just do life in a good way, even though you still got a whole bunch of flaws and a lot of scars you're still dealing with. So now you're fragile, right? But you're still allowing yourself to get hit by all these different things because you haven't dealt with the pain and you haven't built an armor up because all you keep being, you have no armor around you.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt like. I had no armor. So I was making bad choices after bad choices and it just stuck. And that's when I knew, kept putting myself through the undeserving phase, I guess.
That's, I like the way you put it. It's, men make bad decisions too, right? I stop saying definitive things. Like typically you'll hear either the bashing or the cry for pity when the women are selecting men that aren't suitable for them, right? Yeah. I think both parties have a part to play. And I'm not talking about you get with a man, he starts abusing you and there were no signs of it. That's very different and drastic. But when you know that this is not the person for you, whether you're the man or the female, right? I didn't stay in those phases long because I don't think I was emotionally available enough to deal with toxicity. So the first time, pure, I'm out. Now, I might have got the bad rap because I left and didn't try, but I just, yell at me one time on the phone, that's you saying you don't want to talk to me no more. Mm. Click, I'm out, right? And I never dealt with that. But I also think that I didn't develop some problem-solving skills to work through things that may not have been as big as I made them, right? If I saw something and it wasn't as major as I reacted, but in my mind, I was like, nah, if you do that, you can do this.
Yeah,
you rob, you steal, you kill, you know, like it's all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So one theory that's been, that's become of interest to me within the last 60 to 90 days is the process of marriage, the growth through marriage, who you were when you got married on is not who you are 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now, right? Both people are changing, right? And
yeah.
Each version of you has to choose each version of them every time for it to work. And sometimes we don't do that. And I'm always curious when people are in their second marriage and they find success, is it that you weren't ready to be married the first time? And all of the things that you learned and left now position you to handle the second time around? Because for me, like, I married, and we have another podcast. We've talked about some of the stuff that's been challenges for us.
Yeah.
We got married. I was 25.
Okay.
As you're talking, it's wild because I'm going to be, your brother's 7 years older. I'm going to be 44 in a couple.
Yeah, exactly.
I got married at 25. Like, okay. Similarity is wild.
Absolutely.
Well, we got married and we both didn't have a healthy understanding of what our marriage should be or what we needed from each other. I'm not even talking about wild stuff, but like I say it all the time. What I saw my dad do for my mom, I mimic, but that didn't necessarily work for my wife.
Yeah.
She's not my mom.
Yeah.
So is it better to mature longer in life and be ready to be married later in life? Or do you only get those lessons from the first marriage experience, regardless of what that age is?
Everybody's path is different, but I do believe that we do need to examine such a serious commitment earlier in life and reserve that for later in life once you are able to figure out who you are in totality and you have a good foundation of not only who you are, but how you can handle multiple situations. The only way you're going to get those situations is through age. And then hopefully you take that age and you kind of move it into a great experience, right? Yeah. Because you can have the age, but not have the experience by lacking behind.
Yeah.
So I do think part of that should be, if you 25 and you've had a successful marriage, I'm pretty sure you've had ups and downs through your marriage, just like any other marriage, right? But you can say, this is who I've been with for a long time.
Yeah.
Who I've grown with even through when I couldn't navigate through how to deal with healthy conflict or what healthy conflict looked like, right? And so what has transpired for me from the first marriage to the second has been, what I can look back on and say, yes, I was too young when I got married. I think a lot of it was out of convenience for the both of us. I mean, moved in together, and she literally moved for me from Baltimore to Charlotte, North Carolina.
That's a change.
I mean, it's a huge change. And yeah. So I remember my mom even saying, you know, when we had our housewarming party in Charlotte, I'll never forget. She pulled me into the room and said, you know, make her an honest woman and marry her because she moved down here for you. So automatically that put the pressure on me to do the right thing, to look the part, to make sure that I'm doing everything I can at 25 years old, because this woman just made a huge sacrifice for me. And that's great. But now I got that pressure on me, right? Pressure I don't think I was ready to handle. You know, now I got to do the right thing. And now I hear that I have to take her to premarital counseling now. Because that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to take her to premarital counseling. But at the same time, we got to focus on trying to make ends meet.
Yeah.
So now we're in survival mode and we're trying to make sure that we're doing everything we're supposed to do. It's just a lot of pressure.
Ooh, survival mode will bring the character out of anybody.
And I wasn't ready for that type of stuff. I was already still a jealous, vindictive person, still trying to develop who I am emotionally, because the emotional part was still lacking, right?
Yeah.
So that's another thing from my first marriage to my second marriage, is that I have grown. I've allowed God to change my heart, like completely
strip
my heart and, you know, have a complete heart transplant. I couldn't have been the same man. God wouldn't have released my wife to me if I would have been the same man. He wouldn't have done it. Because here it is, like somebody so precious as my wife and me, he wasn't going to release some crystal ball just to any dude, because of he already knew all the things she had been through.
Right.
So he wasn't going to do that unless my heart was completely changed. And it took me a process to go through that. And that's where I am now today, being the man that I am today, the man of God, the standard that I have for myself. I got to have that for my wife and carry that. And so I'm just a different person spiritually, emotionally, more healthier, because I did the work on myself and I allowed God to just change me, man. For real.
Healthy is a key word. We, the other podcast that my wife and I, is dormant now, but it's called Healthy Marriage is Dope.
I like that, man.
And it's, one thing that I'm always mindful of is with like the marriage. I hate marriage goals, wife, dad goals. I get it.
Yeah.
But it really makes me cringe, because sometimes we'll celebrate the amount of time that two people have tolerated each other.
It's good.
Right? Because we haven't had a healthy marriage for 18 years. This might be year 2.5, 3, like all things. Because like when you really being critical of it. Not that we were at war, like there were problems, but really assessing how we communicate. That's one of the things that clicked for me when we moved overseas and we had to be a unit.
Yeah.
Like, man, I'm a great communicator at work, terrible in my house. Terrible.
It tends to be like that? Like, If I could kind of just say this, right? Do you know that a lot of times we will build our character more for work, more for the people that are paying us a paycheck, but then the people that we love, that we have to do life with, we put them by the wayside. We put everything on a back burner, even when it comes to a respect level. Have you ever noticed that?
Yes.
Yeah.
This has been the undoing of my life for the last couple of years. Like the silver lining out of COVID for me was sitting still, because I used to travel a lot for it. Even when we moved back, I would be out a week, a month, 2 weeks at a time sometimes. Yeah. And I realized that I would tolerate things, and I'm sure she tolerated way. She's the angel. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
I would in my mind be tolerating things because I knew I had a chance to be out.
Mm-hmm.
If I go away for a week, I can come back and we had enough deep breaths, enough shots, enough whatever, to not care about the thing anymore.
Yeah.
Not resolve it, but have less aggression, less whatever for the thing, and just suppress it. And COVID says, sit down. Like, you know, nah, y'all.
That's sit what still. Bruce Charlene.
Yeah, sit still. And I realized, I was like, man, I got a dope family.
Yeah.
And also realized that a lot of my going, while it was good for my career, I knew that I was going because I wasn't great at home. And if I could go be great in my career, well, look at me. I'm, you know what I'm saying? I'm doing this for y'all, for us. And it's like, they didn't ask for that. Like, we create these attachments to a lifestyle of these faux investments of time and self and discipline and all these things to be this great whatever, right? For individually, create opportunities for your family. But then when you get to the other side and you're celebrating greatness, you realize you ain't really got your family. Y'all might still live in the same house,
mm-hmm.
but did you know that your son won a swim meet or your daughter made the cheer captain? Like those things like that. And I realized, like, yo, I'm missing. It's definitely not proud of my wife to this day. Be like, don't you remember when? Nah.
Yeah.
You were there. Yeah, physically. But nah, like I would bring home work. I had a job where I was managing contracts overseas, and that's how we ended up going to Dubai. But I work in the DC area. And then my contracts would be in like Afghanistan, Iraq, parts of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I work 10 hours in the office. And then when I come home, people are responding from overseas because now they're on the clock. And once I hit now I'm up 2, 3, 4 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Not that anybody asked me to do that, but that's the standard that I want to set. No, Derek is available. He's going to get stuff done.
Yeah.
And it kind of worked out. Like I got promoted, got more money, but I realized I was resenting them because I have to put in all this work so that we can have all of this.
Yeah, that's good.
They ain't asked for, you know what I'm saying?
Man.
They didn't ask for all, none of it. They enjoy some things, but that's the thing I had to catch with. And that's what this whole, and if it sounds familiar, if you listen before, it's going to keep sounding familiar because I'm undoing this, unpacking it every episode. But that's how this podcast started for me. It was like, man, my son was at the age where I was when I wanted to start missing my dad. Like he coming in, I'm going out. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out ways to avoid him for no reason. Like I thought he should let me have more freedom. Or I didn't like, you know, the rules of the house.
Yeah.
And, one thing we got to be really, really careful of is when we associate our why with our family, let's be certain that why is really not blame.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with that too. And just like with your entire, you know, overall flow with life, what you've even gone through with your family and all those things, right? What I was just thinking was that your job was your identity, right? Now, how many times as men, from a traditional standpoint, no matter, look, we as men, we provide.
Yeah.
Daddy provided. Granddaddy provided. They got pensions that they're living off of because their identity was in their work. That's what they were most proud about, talking about at the barbecues. They talking about work and what they did, all those types of things, right? You know what the family starts to turn into? The pawn. Family is the pawn because, listen, it makes you look good. The pawn makes you look good, right? So you got the beautiful wife, talked about in the neighborhood, how she's raising your kids. The whole nine, right? While we get to work, while we get to have our identity rooted in work. And I'm going here because I was the same exact way, right? Travel for work, making a lot of money, fast money sometimes, even when it came to IT work, but it was just, boom, I could just be on a plane in New York and, you know, hey, we need you for 6 months. Can you take this? Here's the rate. Cool. And shoot, sign the contract by Monday. By Wednesday, I'm in New York, you know, and it, all over, right?
Yep.
And so that was where the identity hits. And then the family, it looks great. Beautiful wife, beautiful kids, beautiful house, everything, right? So that becomes the pawn. But then your why, once you get to the why with your family, and you start to understand all of these things, while nice, didn't really matter. Because even that was the outgoing thing with my ex-wife was, you went and wanted to do all these things, but that's not even what I was requiring. And so that was interesting to hear, because it was like, well, you weren't complaining when we were living this nice lifestyle either. But I can also see your point of view, especially if you're saying it failed because of those things. But when you understand your why, like how I truly understand it now, family becomes not only no longer the pawn, they become the crown jewel. So now we got crown jewels where you can say, man, COVID might have been the best thing to happen to you.
Right.
Because you sat down and was like, man, my family is dope. Now I could just see how they've came from, you know, just maturing into these different ways. You get to see that. And it's like, man, work is great. Now my priority is like, I'm going to get off at 6 o'clock so I can make it to my son's soccer game, or I can make it to my daughter's choir rehearsal or recital or something. I can pick them up from school and just, you having a bad day? Let's go get some cookies from Crumble. Let's do something, you know?
Bro, when COVID hit, I was probably a couple of days a week I work from home, but it's not like sitting at home and being available. I'd really be, and actually working from home was worse for me because I'd roll out of bed, 30 minutes I'm working, and then I feel like I had to do more so that nobody would think that I'm just, you know, kind of shirking off.
Yeah.
So my days would be long and I'd do more work. But by the time we closed the office, because everybody went to a remote schedule, I had to use my GPS to find the office again.
Yeah.
Can you come in for it? Can we do it on Zoom? Is this Zoomable? Is this Teamsable? Like, I won't trying to be away from the house for work specifically, probably for the last year that I was with corporate. Because I realized like it was like I'm spending an hour and a half in traffic, staying longer. I'm missing the moments, right? And then I felt like I had to kind of make up for lost time, man. But yeah, to the band out there, bro, the identity, how we were mapping together, how we had people in common, that conference was on identity.
That's good.
Just men just talking about, and it was no pregame and no list of questions or topics that went out.
Yeah, because I learned that about you tonight, because I was like, man, I ain't getting no questions. My man ain't had nothing for me.
Not a game, people. I know me and James said all the time, I got to be genuinely interested in who's sitting across from me to have a conversation that helps somebody, right? But it was interesting to hear the different definitions of men. Of course, mine, I was talking about my job, and then we talk about how it changes, you know, throughout life and how it's shaped from a very, what you see early in life, right? So it's a real thing that I want to continue those conversations on to stay, you know, number one, to keep me accountable. But man, if your job is your identity, I'm not shaming you. I get it. I would recommend a real deep dive reality check as to what really matters before it goes too far. It's nothing worse than arriving at success, climbing the ladder of success, only to find it's leaning against the wrong building.
Yeah.
Like that's a terrible place to land, man. Man, I see right now this is not going to be our last conversation if I'm telling it. But I want to get to one thing that I'm always curious about and I'm somewhat envious of is your lock journey, because there's a few episodes where I was growing my hair.
Okay.
And it kind of stopped for from month two to month eight. That's all I had. the pictures were the same.
Yeah.
I was able to do a little, you know what I'm saying? A
little twist.
No, so my son's got the luscious hair. So what's your do you have an origin story for your lock journey?
Well, I started growing my hair probably the summer of 2020. So during COVID, I started growing my hair.
Right? Never mind. You did all that in 3 years.
Yeah, man. I started.
Big envy energy over here.
November 13th, 2020 is when I locked my hair.
Yeah.
But I was growing it. I had a short haircut as of like the summer, like June of 2020, but my hair grows so fast. So by the time October came, I tried to get it locked the first time and it didn't work. They were like, just come back in like 3 weeks. Came back. And I was even considering, I ain't gonna lie, I considered getting the extensions because I didn't want to go through the Kobe phase of of, you know, locks, but I muscled through that Kobe phase. Ooh. I muscled through that Kobe phase, man. Ooh. I made it to like 2 months in my lock journey, 3 months. And I was able to start getting the like barrel braids and stuff. Yeah. They would be like the tiny little barrel braids. But if you looked on like over my head, it still looked like I had a short haircut. So I was able to rock that style out for months and my hair would just grow. And so here I am 3 years now. But the reason why I went on my journey was it was straight spiritual. I had said for years I wanted to grow locks to my head, you know, with my hair. I had said it for years and, you know, my ex-wife would say, no, I don't think you should do it. And, you know, and so once I got divorced, I was like, let me go ahead and just start this lock journey. And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised, like, once I started growing my hair, what it would look like and all that. I was, like, even surprised.
Disgusting, man.
So I love it, man.
Man, I realized that this platform sometimes comes across as a lot of, this is vulnerable, and that's the intent, right? But this is not a me bashing platform. This is not a guest bashing themselves platform. We have these conversations to prompt you to have some different thoughts internally and have some other conversations, maybe in your house. That's where it should start. But I want to make sure that we highlight like what we do well, man. This year, what's your biggest flex in fatherhood?
My biggest
flex. Or as a man.
I mean, you know, we on the Dear Son podcast, and I know that a lot of things that I love your content, first of all. And I know I'm probably super late in the game saying that, but I absolutely love James's content. You guys co-hosting this show is absolutely phenomenal. And I think what I've been touched with the most is the actual Dear Son tweets that you normally put out. Because what it does is allows me to, number one, take a feeling back on if my father was there to say some of these things to me. But what it gives me an opportunity and a privilege to do is to say those same things to my sons. I have 3 sons. And my biggest flex being a father is seeing even like my kids grow with me. And I'm growing as a parent too. I just, you know, just brought 3 children into the fold last year, right? And those kids were built for me. They were made for me to be in my life and for them to be in mine and stuff. And so they my flex, man. Like, of course, you know, my biological kids, like, they're my biggest flex in life, period, because I helped create them, you know, and they have a piece of me. But specifically with my bonus kids, to see their growth and evolution over the past year and them to see them love, like their mom being loved correctly, that's a huge thing. So they get to actually see, hey, you know, yeah, mom and dad, to get to them, it's disgusting to see us do what we do as mom and dad. But they love it because they actually see mom being loved. They've never seen me like argue in front of their mom. Like, we may have disagreements and stuff. We always go in the room and have these conversations best way we know how. You know, sometimes it gets a little heated, but the kids don't even have to see it or hear it, because there's still a level of respect that they see with both of us. So that's my biggest flex, man, is the way I treat my wife and the way that I love my kids.
I will argue, not for me to say, but that point you made about they are seeing their mom being treated the right way, I think that's huge.
Yeah.
Super huge. Locks Lounge, man. Talk about your podcast.
Locks Lounge. So it was originated from my loctician. Her name is Lisa Love. And Lisa was the one that put together the locks, you know, she put together the love and entrepreneurship discussion.
Yeah.
So she put that together. She not only is a loctician, but she also owns Love Wraps. And so I was in the chair one night and I was, you know, saying, hey, I'm about to do this thing solo with my podcast and everything. So what should I name it? And she said, we should name it Locks Lounge. And I said, well, what would locks even stand for? I love the idea because I have locks. So what could that stand for? And we started just going through acronyms. And she was like, you know, you're real culture-based. You really want to elevate the culture. So what about something like living to overcome cultural stereotypes? So we brought that together. That was a name that we created together. And it really does symbolize who I am. I am a man who feel like I'm a man to that has overcome so many different things.
Yeah.
And I use my platform to tell stories and allow people to tell their stories, from barbers, beauticians, locticians, people in the beauty industry is where it originated, to for them to tell stories. And the reason why I did that was because so many times in the Black community, you hear stories from other people, but you hear them from the lens of the barber or the beautician, right, but they don't get to tell their own story. So what is thing, while they're your fashion designer, they, your, you know, they also tell you your therapist, they try to tell you things about life. So they pour into you. I use that as an outlet to allow them to pour into themselves through their story.
Very dope.
So I appreciate that. So that's, so it expanded, of course, to like Black professionals, because now it became an outcry, like, what about me being on the podcast? And it is a traveling podcast too. So I've traveled to San Diego to film. I've traveled to Atlanta to film a couple of times, Baltimore, Amityville, New York, been in Detroit one time. So Houston a few times. And so it's definitely been a blessing to connect with people all over the US so far that bring me in to tell their story. Baltimore, Philly, you know, so I try to bring people into the fold that have a story to tell. And, you know, it just brings healing, because we elevate in the culture, you get in a different perspective. Yeah. So that's what I do.
What's the process taught you about you? The podcast.
The process with the podcast, it's actually, you know what? Just like with your platform, I think you kind of mentioned it, but when you have people on your platform and you hear their story, right? It's therapeutic. It's very therapeutic. And so what it has bore for me is another level of accountability. And so if I'm going to be on a platform and people are going to see me, that means that they're most likely going to follow my example in certain ways, right? Not only just looking at me, but it's the God in me that they're going to see. And that's what I want people to draw close to me about is people just seeing the God in me and who God has elevated me as a man, and saying, listen, if I can overcome any type of cultural stereotype or in the things I'm still trying to overcome, you can too. That's really what it's about, man.
Let the people know where they can find it, where they can find you.
Yeah, so you can find me on Facebook at Tim Nicholas. You can find me also at Locks Lounge Podcast on every single platform. You can find me Locks Lounge Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, you name it. So that's where I'm at. And, you know, just, and also on YouTube. And also I do have another podcast with my friend Tam Watts, which was a crazy situation, but we have a podcast called The Back Pew of Conversations. So
The Back what?
The Back Pew Conversations. So
yeah, there'll be some conversations happening there.
Oh yeah. we talk a lot of pop culture stuff. Okay. So The Back Pew Conversations, that's on YouTube, and that's also on like Instagram and Twitter and everything.
So dope, man. I appreciate you coming through, my brother.
Thank you, brother. Everything
will be linked down below. Make sure you follow, subscribe. It helps. Like, just because you liked it, you need to let the algorithm know that other people will also like it. And you do that by liking it and subscribing and leaving a comment. I know you think it's futile. It really helps people like us get noticed by people like you who would also enjoy the content. And if this podcast wasn't for you, it is for you to share with somebody who would enjoy it. So don't be a blessing blocker. What didn't I promote? Because I normally don't. Dear Son, the DearSonPodcast.com. You can find everything there, your audio options, your visual options. There's merch there, an ebook, Dear Son, 20 life props that facilitate effective parenting. As he referenced, my thoughts that I put on IG, I expound on them, and then I give you some exercises to help you think through some of those thoughts as well, and some exercises for you to do with your family. So pick it up to those that have supported. I appreciate you. Shout out to Malawi. Malawi, I can't pronounce the actual city. I know the long way, but that's not where they are. I was on a Zoom with the group in Malawi that was discussing mental health. They saw the podcast, they saw the content on IG, reached out. We've had a couple of discussions. I'm going to Africa in 2024. I don't know which two countries I'm going to.
Absolutely going. Love it.
So the point is, don't dismiss the power of your story. the two people that may be watching, one may be the president and one may be the CEO. And that may be all you need. So I think that's it for now. Salute to my partner, James, who's enjoying his life as he should. He'll be back soon. We appreciate you guys. God bless you. Peace.
They tried to count me out. I'ma gon' count me in. Fill up my bank account. Now I got something to spend. Nah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I just pull it out and count for nothing when I'm feeling great. Give my baby little money.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.